Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We're in-depth on Better Angels 6 months into the Trump presidency.
I found myself saying, hey, listen, I don't agree with this, but there are people who have real reasons that affect their lives, you know, for why they voted for him that's beyond what you're looking at right now.
What if these groups were to listen to each other? Because there is a lot of common goals, but a lot of the values and the ways that we want to get there are different.
Those are two Better Angels from Ohio. We talked to them for our national call-in show last winter called Indivisible. Well, the Better Angels project has expanded and continued with the help of Bill Daugherty from the University of Minnesota. And as he joins me today, I want to see how capable you might be of tapping into the Better Angel of your nature. If you identify as a Democrat, have you been in a situation where you've put aside the stereotypes and the assumptions you have about Trump voters, and you've had a truly open and meaningful conversation? And vice versa, Republicans, can you talk about politics with Clinton voters or Democrats with respect and openness? So we're going to do a little Better Angels experiment right here on the air, and we're going to hear about how the movement is growing in a big bus tour that they have across the country. But I want you to talk to me today about whether you have been able to have open and meaningful conversations with your political opposite or with people that believe different things than you do politically. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828 on Twitter. At Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, M-P-R. Bill Daugherty is a professor of social science at the University of Minnesota, where he's director of the Citizens Professional Center. He's also working with BetterAngels.org. Bill, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Great to be here.
Tell me how things have changed since I talked to you. What was it, March? February? What's happening with Better Angels?
Well, what happened after I did that interview with you in the Indivisible series, we had people from all over the country reaching out to us saying, could you come to our town, our city, and sponsor a red-blue dialogue and teach us how to do it? And so out of that came this bus tour we're going to do, starting in Ohio and going east, and perhaps another in July, and perhaps another one in September. So yeah, there's a lot of interest.
So what happened, I think we talked to you shortly after you had been in Ohio. This was the first setting, I think, for these kinds of conversations.
Yes.
You'd been to Ohio. You'd pull people together who had very differing political views. And remind us of what happened on that weekend.
Well, we did two of them. So after our first interview, we did a second one. And this one, we had a documentary film crew there. So this one will be coming out as probably a PBS documentary.
Excellent.
And so we pulled together a group of about 17 or 18. We called half red, half blue. We spent Friday night, all day Saturday, and Sunday afternoon together in conversation with the goal of people understanding their differences without stereotypes and seeing if there was common ground. And if there was, seeing if they might want to do something in the world. And out of that came a Southwest Ohio chapter of Better Angels. There's a group of reds and blues who are meeting every other week now.
Really?
To try to influence the dialogue and public policy in ways that they agree.
I remember that one of the things that you described from those initial sessions was that it was hard for people to hold their cliches and to even demonize one another when they were sitting face to face and they were seeing that the other one was truly interested in listening. It's hard to hold on to that demonization when you're looking somebody else in the eye and getting to know them.
That's right. That's the key. When we just look at the op-ed pages or watch TV or whatever, we form stereotypes of other people. And these dialogues are a de-stereotyping exercise. These are actual people with complex views on things.
I think that's what we heard from Indivisible, too, actually, for the whole show, is that when people would call in to say, you think you know me because I'm going to tell you that I voted for Donald Trump, you don't really know anything about my life. This is something that you're really getting at, isn't it?
Yeah, and one of the questions we ask people is, what are your reservations or concerns about your own side?
Right.
Okay, and then that shows people, like the very first answer in Ohio when we asked that question to the Red Group was this young man said, well, Trump is a jerk as a human being. Okay, that was his reservation. Okay, another person said, well, he doesn't know anything about foreign affairs, but they still supported him and voted for him, even though they saw weaknesses. And similarly, the Hillary people said, pretty arrogant, a lot of our folks dismiss working class people. You know, they were... And they deplored the deplorables comments you
yeah,
made, okay?
Right.
So when people show that they're not just fanatics for their own side, that they see some downsides, that helps a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's also something about not being so absolute and certain that kind of opens a window. I mean, maybe that's the entry point for real conversation. If you don't just project this is how I feel and I'm not thinking about it again and you're never going to change my mind.
Right. And if you come at even your passionate beliefs, see, when there's a story behind those, you know, when you've lost your job to a company that, you know, goes overseas and you feel like somebody is there trying to help you.
Right.
That's personal then. OK, that's personal. It's easier to understand.
Calls from Dan in Chaska. Hi, Dan. Interested in what you have to say about this. Tell me a little bit about you first.
Well, I'm an American government teacher at a high school in the Twin Cities. And we had 9th and 10th graders in the class this year. And we had some pretty good discussions. What I noticed about it was we really had to be careful about setting it up. And people really struggled if we didn't have facts, because they were just going by either what someone else had said or what they'd randomly seen on the internet. So we took out the actual presidential order, executive order in March, and we read it. And people went, oh, I didn't know it had this in it. I didn't know it had that in it. And we had some pretty adult-like conversations. And so I thought that would be encouraging for everybody to hear that 10th graders can do this, so can we.
Beautiful.
I think that's right. And you know, Bill, I hear what Dan says about we were careful to make sure we were saying true things. I mean, you were careful in moderating these conversations, weren't you, to not let people just make statements that might be influenced by things that weren't true, right?
No. Briefly, no.
No.
And when you bring people together, we have dialogues. This was a weekend. We have a 2.5-hour version and a day-long version. There isn't enough time, like a teacher has in a classroom, to see if everybody in the room would agree on what would be a source of real facts. We have a big dispute in this country about what are credible sources for facts.
Right.
And so for these brief dialogues, we do not drill down to a particular policy issue and see if we can all agree on the facts.
Here's what I meant by that, though. If somebody made a statement of, well, Hillary Clinton hates all Republican or hates everybody that lives in red state. I mean, you weren't going to let that kind of stuff stand, were you?
Yeah. So the way this is set up is people listen and then we pose questions to each side. The questions don't lend themselves to inflammatory comments. People bring their best selves. But occasionally, if somebody does diverge from what we're doing now and make a kind of a big, bold statement, then I stop them.
And then what would you say?
I would say that's not what we're doing at the moment. I remember like one of the second Ohio dialogue in the middle of the second afternoon, out of nowhere, one of the guys on the blue side launched into a gun control statement.
Okay. Perfect issue for this kind of discussion.
That wasn't what we were doing at the moment. What we're doing is we just had an exercise where each side shared something. And what we're doing at the moment was answering the question, what did you learn about the other side that you didn't know before?
Got it.
And then this guy launches. So I said, I'll call Jeff. So I said, Jeff, could you connect that to what we were doing just now? He said, no, I just wanted to say it. I said, so let the record state that Jeff feels strongly about this. And then it said, let's move on.
Okay. Because you're right. I mean, that's so often the nature of the debate of these very difficult issues like gun control. I mean, think about all the advertising and the statements that are made on cable news about President Obama wants to take away your guns. It's so much more complicated, the reality of where these positions are on
right.
gun control.
And the Second Amendment is complicated. There's big debates among scholars about this. This is a very complicated issue. A lot of blues when concealed guns came in, you know, we passed the law.
The
opponents said we're going to have, you know, it's going to be gunfights in the old K Corral here, right?
That's right.
That didn't happen. So we just all have to be a little more humble on this. But the key is that in these dialogues, we don't let people just riff on something.
Okay.
We just don't let it happen.
Bailey says on Twitter, the last time I spoke to a Trump voter, I was told I wasn't a Christian if I voted for Hillary. She says, I did. Never been more insulted. How would you have diffused that? Maybe we give a little bit of help to Bailey the next time something like that happens.
Well, you have to decide if this is somebody you actually want to be in a dialogue with. Okay. So we actually have a skills workshop, a 2-hour skills workshop on how to talk across the red-blue divide. And one of the principles is this somebody you think has any interest at all in your perspective, any at all? Well, if they don't, then don't put yourself out there. But if you think it's possible that you could have a connection and you're actually in a conversation and somebody says that kind of thing, then you could say, whoa, okay, could we tone it down and keep talking without my responding to that? I mean, there's various things you can do if somebody says something inflammatory.
To the phones to Tucker in Rochester. Hi, Tucker.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Doing well. I'm interested in your experience with this.
Yeah. So I went to the U of M for a little while. I would consider myself a Republican. I couldn't bring myself to vote for Donald Trump. I ended up voting for Gary Johnson. But a thing that I found so encouraging that actually just made me really happy leading up to the election is just at the U is just a huge melting pot. I mean, not as many probably Republicans as there are Democrats, but there is definitely a mix there. And something that I got to do just like in my friend groups and in just with people I got to hang out with and things like that is I got to be more of a mediator and just like kind of coordinate civil discussions just that, I don't know, just hanging out with people. And that was like something that was so exciting was that people were able to just like get their points out there and like nobody was like saying like crazy irrational things. It was just very exciting to just be a part of that discussion, even though people had very different political viewpoints.
Tucker, this is really encouraging. Way to go. I mean, so you were not in any way purposely avoiding people who had difficult or different political views. You were actually diving in, going towards them.
You got to run straight at it. because it's political views aren't worth losing friendships over.
Bill,
good for you, Tucker. Tucker's a better angel, okay? Because the big point behind this Better Angels work is that we have to live together. Donald Trump will be gone in a certain amount of time, okay? Our big concern is what's happened and what has been happening to the social fabric. Can we come together in anything? Can we be respectful? Can we be civil? There are friendships breaking up. There are marriages breaking up over this. And so what are the skills and the attitudes we need to be able to be together as citizens across our differences?
Phone call here from Mara in Fargo. Is it Mara? Mara? Hi.
Hi, it's Mara.
Hi, really good to have you on the line. What's your experience been with this?
Well, I'm a very strong Democrat, and one of the things that I haven't liked about the great divide between us is the fact that we're not getting anything done because we are so set in our ways. And it's been interesting to me when I will talk to a Republican, as an example, I'll talk to a Republican, and I will decide without saying anything that I'm going to agree with everything they're saying. just to see if they'll start asking me questions and if we can get somewhere. And they'll become more open with me. But when I start to say the things that I believe in, then I start hearing the mantra that keeps going on between us. And I've often wondered what concept you're talking about of getting together. I've often wondered if that would help. But I really think now is a better time than ever, because there's a lot of young people. You know, Bernie Sanders really raised a level of interest in the younger generation. And I would love it if they would all get along.
Okay. What do you hear in that, Bill? Mara, thank you.
Well, I hear her making a good faith effort. I'm not sure I would just flat out agree as a way in, because then people might feel kind of tricked a little bit if in fact you say some other things. But I do think it's a great idea to listen first and see if you understand what the other person, if you can paraphrase back what somebody's saying to you. So if I'm getting your position on this,
if I'm understanding this right, this is what you're saying, right.
And you can get that right, a lot of times people will then be open to your perspective.
It's funny how that works. I wonder why. What's the psychology of that, Bill?
Is if we feel heard, we soften towards somebody. Whereas if it's just we just harden our stand. The other thing I'd say to people who are on the liberal blue side, who have these examples of Republicans and conservatives not listening, there are plenty of examples on the other side of conservatives wanting to have a conversation, because I've talked to these folks and getting blast and being called a racist and a homophobe and a xenophobe and all that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of stuff that goes back and forth on both sides.
When I've been in the middle of conversations like that, that begin with, well, if you voted for Donald Trump, then you must wear the mantle of everything.
Yes.
I will say, people will say, I'm simply not going to talk to Trump voters because I think they have to be accountable for everything he does. Mm-hmm. And I'll say, kind of what you've said, I can't go around demonizing people who are my friends, you know, people that I'm encountering in different places. That's exhausting, for one thing, and you are never going to get anywhere for that. So if you can separate the politician from the people who saw something. And I know I'm going to get blasted on Twitter for this, but isn't that part of the exercise?
Absolutely. There is diversity on both sides of this, a lot more diversity. And a big challenge, and this is why I've been changed in doing this work, is of seeking to understand people who are different from me. And that changes you. That changes you when you come to see it from their perspective. So I offer this challenge to somebody on the blue side, that if somebody has their entire life never voted for a single Democrat, okay, and they did not support Trump during the primaries, and eventually it came down to two people, and Hillary Clinton for them represented the Democratic establishment that and pro-choice and so many and gun control and so many things that they have spent their lives opposing. So for some of these folks, they took a gamble on an outsider who would change things. Okay, does that mean that they are small Donald Trumps? No.
Right. And that they have to own everything that Donald Trump stood for, because they wanted somebody else. But
but when it came down to that vote, they could not. They could not vote for Hillary Clinton.
Bill Dougherty is a professor of family social science at the University of Minnesota. He's in the studio with me this morning because I wanted to find out what's going on with his work with betterangels.org. Lots of things happening with that. You can go to the website to check that out. They've got a bus tour that's taking place. When do you start?
July 4th.
Okay. At a benefit. Start on the 4th.
Yes, we start on the 4th in Waynesville, Ohio, at a barn that is like a reception place, a concert, a benefit concert that's going to be put on by a guy named Richard Lynch, who is a country western singer and the head of the local Tea Party. And performing with him will be Peter Yarrow, of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Right.
And, you know,
a well-known liberal activist.
Who is a big supporter of Better Angels.
Yep.
And they're going to co-perform. And so that's a sign.
The fireworks will happen later, or the fireworks will happen on the stage?
They
don't know.
They performed together already in Ohio at our last Better Angels meeting. And they sang This Land Is Your Land together at the end of this.
Excellent.
There was not a dry eye in the room.
So in the spirit of Better Angels, I'm asking you whether you identify as a Republican, an independent, a Democrat. If you've been able to have some of these open and meaningful conversations about politics with people that believe different things politically from you, and when I say that, I mean you engaged in active listening, but you also shared some of your views, and you walked away saying that was meaningful, that mattered. Have you been able to do that? Why or why not? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at Kerry NPR. It's K-E-R-R-I NPR. Jeff says, recently I was at a game night with friends. Politics came up. The hostess said she hated Trump voters and was demanding they leave.
Ooh.
She's not a Better Angel yet. Maybe there's some hope for her, the hostess.
Yeah, it takes my breath away. And I've seen it in families. I've seen people refuse to have, you know, Thanksgiving dinner with their family members.
Have you?
Yes. I know of a young man who called his parents after he found out they voted for Trump and said, "You're no longer my parents." This is bad stuff.
What was your advice to that young guy?
This was third party. Okay. His mother had gone to her doctor saying, "I don't know what to do." She was having stomach aches. She was having so many problems, and so. But if I seek to understand the hostess of that party, if I seek to understand that young man, there is fear, and there is a great worry among many people about what's happening to our country and what Trump is doing with our country. What I want to say is that there are people who support Trump who are so glad that Hillary is not in there because she represented for them a scary continuation of big government intrusion into our lives. And if you're on the blue side, you think, what the heck? But that is just as real and just as scary in many ways as Trump is for people on the Democratic side.
Darian says on Twitter, I think this is an answer to you, Bill, a Trump voter isn't necessarily a little Trump, but this election should be a lesson on the importance of policy and not rhetoric. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's a good argument to make. However, what I'd say, if I have my Better Angels hat, I mean, if you ask me, is Bill Daugherty, you know, just what do I think personally? But if I have my Better Angels hat, if I have my Facilite hat on, there is an assumption that the other side only has rhetoric, okay? And there's an assumption that a more policy wonkish approach is better. And you may agree with that. I probably agree with that. But if he were setting up a question in one of our dialogues, I would help do something with that term policy versus rhetoric.
Got it.
That is a duality there. Okay, that makes an assumption about the other side that they don't believe is true of them.
Call from Tracy in Minneapolis. Hi, Tracy. You sound like you might be struggling with this a little bit.
Is that right? I sure am. Well, what I said to your screener was that this isn't about rhetoric to me. I mean, this is my life. My sister said to me recently via text, why can't we just get along and put ourselves past this? And this is my life I'm dealing with and the life of my family. I come from, you know, I'm a very liberal person. I voted for Hillary Clinton in this election. My family's from rural Wisconsin. They all voted for Donald Trump. And we can't speak right now. Mm. I cannot bridge that gap with my mother thinking, you voted for a man who said he would sexually, not assault, but sexually, I'll say assault women, you know, without their consent. How do you get past that? That is just sickening. I can't bridge that gap with my family right now, to be honest, Bill and Kerry.
Yeah, I hear you.
Tracy, neither one of us, though, would want you to lose your mother and your relationship with your mother over this, right?
Oh, well, we haven't spoken since the election, to be honest.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear
that. I can't do it because this is, you know, my family, I have a son with autism. We all have pre-existing conditions. I work for the Hennepin County Library System. Like, all that could go away because of this man that you voted for. How do you get past that? How do you say that's okay? I understand we have these fundamental differences.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Well, this is, you're right. This is not rhetoric. This is real, Tracy. And I don't have a formula for you. What I can say is that I think it's important to separate Trump from one's mother, and to not let Donald Trump create these divisions within our families. That's, if he's the enemy, I get that, that our mothers are not our enemies.
Their beliefs might be, though.
Yeah, their beliefs might be, but that's not
the whole person.
That's not the whole person. So I, you know, I have no formula for you. You know, it's very, very painful.
Sure.
But the what I always encourage all of us to do is to think of the person in front of us for who they are, and we may think that they are deluded and confused, and to not let a third party politician hurt our families.
Sure.
Do you miss your mom? I'm sure you do.
I not right now, to be honest. Right.
Tracy, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
I really do, because you, this is kind of the prime example,
yes,
of what Better Angels is trying to work with, right?
Yeah, and so it's so real, Tracy. So appreciate your sharing that with us all.
Bill Dougherty with us this morning, and we're talking about his work with Better Angels. He's a social scientist at the University of Minnesota, getting at this idea of being in different places politically. We just heard an excellent example of the dissension that this has created within families. I think I'd like to ask you if you have your own experience with that. Maybe you're involved in some kind of a breach or a break with a close friend, a family member, over politics. So how are you thinking about getting around that? What's your view on that? What kind of advice are you looking for on that? And what do you think about the need for the kinds of conversations that Bill is talking about this morning? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. Bill, you were trying to organize some other opportunities for dialogue here. And how is that going to work?
Well, we have a short form dialogue, a 2.5 hour version. That I've done locally, and we have a day long, and we have a weekend. Okay, that's more intensive. The Ohio things we did were weekends. And we also have a skills workshop, a 2-hour skills workshop. You get to practice how to talk to people across the divide. And so if anybody out there is interested in organizing one of these dialogues, like the short ones or the middle ones or the long one, where they get people, reds and blues, together, or they're interested in sponsoring a skills workshop, then they can email me, and I think it's on your website.
We'll have it on the website. Right.
Because I would really love to have a local chapter of Better Angels. Tonight at a local library, actually, I'm doing a dialogue, a red and blue dialogue. We have 12 people who are Trump supporters and 12 people who are not coming together for an evening for a dialogue we're doing at a local library.
Where is it? Can people come in, or is
it's not
open to the public?
Yeah. Well, it's okay. Close. It was oversubscribed.
Okay. Got it.
And so, but we have a couple of library systems locally who are interested in sponsoring these.
Kelly says, I also hesitate to discuss with my family, who is across from me now, because they're dogmatic. No one else could be right. She was also saying, as she creeps out, she's wondering how to start these conversations.
Yeah.
And I think your skills workshop might be helpful in
right.
that.
The other thing I say is groups are not the best way to start. One-on-one.
Okay.
One-on-one.
And say why.
Well, if you are the only blue in an ocean of red, or vice versa, you can get feel intimidated, and also the worst angels of people's natures come out when they're together.
It's kind of the mob thing.
Yeah, that's
starts
right.
To come
and
out.
So, so the best thing is to start with one member. I did this in my extended family. This is where extended families, you know, are the main sources of political diversity in our country. Right? We don't choose them, right? And so I practiced this over the holidays with some relatives, one on one. Okay,
and I remember you describing this.
Yeah.
Sounds like you really had to dip into your skills there.
Right. And so there are two big things. One is listen and paraphrase. So the other, so am I getting this? Be willing to say something critical about your own side.
Got it.
Okay. Like, and who doesn't have something critical?
Right.
If otherwise you're a fanatic. Okay.
Right.
And this tends to elicit some self-criticism on the other side. Okay. If you do that before you launch into your own particular views, this softens it. Those are examples of skills we teach.
It's like three tips. If you're going to be in the middle of something like this, use those ideas to get into the middle, and then maybe head for a skills workshop that Bill's doing for deeper conversation around that.
Yeah.
Bill, listen to this. Naomi says, listening to your discussion right now, don't we have to have hard lines and boundaries when it comes to our beliefs?
Well, I'm all for, in the public sphere, we need to debate this stuff. We need what's happening in Washington. It's deeply troubling and concerning. So there's the sphere of debate, you know, fundraise for your candidates. There's an election. There's a winner and a loser. There's contest. Our system is based on contest, okay? I'm talking about the level of friends and families and coworkers and people we have ongoing relationships with. And how do we have disagreement and contest and still preserve those relationships? So it's two levels.
I think there is underlying that tweet. There is this idea that if I even listen to the argument and I listen truly receptively to the argument of someone who disagrees with everything I believe, then I'm damaging my own integrity.
Yes.
And I'm not standing by my principles. What's the answer to that?
The answer to that is at the level of persons and of understanding the complexity of other people. So there was a man at the Second Ohio Dialogue who said from the beginning that that abortion and pro-life was his issue. He even referred to Donald Trump as Don Trump. Okay. And he engaged in conversation about abortion with people at the workshop through a question that was a very good question that I helped him compose. And that is, how can somebody be opposed to abortion personally and be pro-choice legally? It's a great question. And it wasn't a gotcha question. It wasn't you a hypocrite question. And I won't go into all the answers on it. But people on the blue side soulfully answered that question.
That was really a quest for knowledge.
Yes.
Behind
that's right.
That question.
That's right. And they were not doing the traditional contest rhetoric. Okay.
Right.
I'm for women. I'm for
right.
choice. End
right.
of it. Get out of my body. You know, blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Right.
That's what we do at the level of contest. And I understand that. They talked about it in a more personal way. And then in the parking lot after that evening session, this man and one of the women who answered the question talked for half an hour.
Wow.
At the end of this workshop, the end of the 3 days, this man said, I haven't changed my views, but my edges are softer.
Yeah.
My edges are softer. He didn't compromise principles. They didn't compromise principles, but their edges were, which meant he had a more sympathetic understanding of how people could differ from him.
Call here from Chris in St. Paul. Hi, Chris. Thanks so much for waiting.
Yeah. Hi. Thank you. I guess my question is, what do you do when you can't agree on the facts? I mean, the divide is so bad at this point that you have people saying climate change is a hoax or it doesn't exist, that, oh, we have attacks that don't exist, that, well, you can't believe the mainstream. Like, my own friend called you guys Minnesota propaganda radio. So how in the world do you try when you can't even educate? Because the idea of you trying to educate and even give knowledge, and I'm not saying educate in a condescending way, I'm
right.
saying offer knowledge and try to create some sort of rational scientific process, is seen as an attack, because, I mean, Trump has been so hardlined on this particular issue that, you know, his follower, Trump supporters in particular, they're, you can play loose with opinions, but, you know, for me, it's like, if it's a fact, if you start challenging facts, what's the authority you can move forward with?
You know, here's the thing I was thinking, Chris, when you said what your friend calls NPR. Now, I'll bet your friend probably doesn't listen very much to NPR. That's fine. He's listening to whatever stuff. But a conversation just like this might really be enlightening. I mean, your friend might find an opening in a conversation just like this to call in and add something to it. So I always hope that when I hear stuff like that, I think, well, they're not fully acquainted with what we do. And if they would be open enough, right, to tune in and listen to it, you know, a mind could be changed in the spirit of better angels, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And I also want to say that not all minds will be changed.
Understood.
And not everybody is open to this. But let me tell you, we did a dialogue in Apple Valley, one of the 2.5-hour dialogues. And the question of the environment came up. There was one of the Reds whose main objection to Donald Trump was around climate science. And she said she thinks he's absolutely wrong, that she still overall supports him. And one of the Blues wrote down what they learned. I didn't know you could be a Republican and be for, you know, for against global warming or believe in it. The other thing that the Reds said was everybody there was concerned about the environment. Everybody wanted, you know, a good water and air, and there was divergence about, you know, the climate science. But and so at usually, Gary, when people are not just propagandists, at some higher level of values, there's a place to start. Like, we care about the planet, and everybody wants clean air and clean water. Okay, and everyone wants an economy that works. Okay. And at some higher level, there is often agreement. There can be disagreement when you get to how we do it. Right. The other thing I want to add is that there are some issues like climate change, which have become tribalized in this country. And once they become tribalized, they're very difficult to deal with.
And why is that?
Because they're about identity. My okay. side, my right. people. Evolution is a scientific issue.
Right.
It has become a tribal right. issue. It's about whether I can believe in God or not, okay, for some people. And so stepping carefully into these. So people often on the Blue side think it's about facts. Like, if we could just agree on facts, okay, yeah. But some kinds of facts are tied up in identity issues, and they are emotional issues, and they are, if I diverge from my tribe on this, am I still a member
right.
of my tribe?
Got
and the
it.
Thing for, I would say, to liberals is there's a liberal tribe too. Mm-hmm. There's a liberal tribe too, and instinctive kinds of ways to say, no, this is how I see this, and we see it.
One of the things, Bill, that as I read about what you're doing with Better Angels, it seems like there is more of a shared lack of trust in institutions that comes out, maybe no matter which tribe you subscribe to, that comes out. Oddly, that's a sad thing, but oddly,
yes.
I think that is something that joins people together more than they would believe. And I'm not saying that that's an optimistic thing, but among people who think I share there is nothing that joins me with those people that believe that. Unfortunately, a lot of us have a lack of trust in institutions. Thus, we hold so firm to these beliefs because I think it's informed by that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So at the Ohio Dialogues, one of the unifiers was an anger at the media for dividing us.
Uh-huh.
And both sides had that.
Uh-huh.
Because they were now getting to know people who were more complicated,
absolutely.
More nuanced than they had gotten from
cable news has to own some of that.
Yes, exactly. And both sides were angry about that. And both sides were angry about politicians who divide us as well, although, you know, they differ on who those politicians are.
Sean says on Twitter, I used to be a very conservative Republican, but engaging in discussions with libertarians, liberals, etc., has made me moderate. Jeff says, I'm a right-leaning moderate, got banned from NPR's blog because I made a true statement about Medicaid, no room for different views. Not buying it there, Jeff. If you, I don't believe that. But and Gen Z says great stuff. Exactly what the country needs. Props to Better Angels. Here's Katie in Eden Prairie. Hi, Katie. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi. Thank you. The reason that I called is that, you know, with all the conversation about having a really difficult time being in a relationship and having relationships with across party lines. A couple weeks before the election, I met my boyfriend, who is a Republican, and I'm over here as a, you know, Bernie Sanders supporter, very passionate about, you know, pro-choice and all of the Black Lives Matter movement, LGBTQ. And so all my friends are freaking out that I'm embarking in this relationship with a Republican. And after the election, and 3 days after the election, it became really apparent to me that I was having a hard time with it. And so I just broke down crying and having a hard time with it. And I asked, trying to figure out how I can bridge this, I asked him, why did you vote for him? And listening to what he had to say about why he voted for him, I really got present. He didn't vote for him for all the reasons that I really disliked Donald Trump. And being able to actually hear what it was for him, I was able to get myself out of the stories that I make up about Donald Trump and about Donald Trump supporters and just people who voted for him, because he's not even a Trump supporter. He's just a Republican who couldn't vote for Hillary.
Wow.
And liked his business ideas. And so what was really present for me is, as a liberal person who has been preaching tolerance of one another, you know, tolerance of the Black Lives Matter movement and tolerance of LGBTQ and women and all of that, I now have this wonderful opportunity to be tolerant of a group of people I've had a hard time having tolerance over. And that hypocrisy within myself was glaring. And it was a really beautiful opportunity for actually me to preach that which, or to be that which I preach.
Super insightful, and Katie. So, wow. So are you still with the boyfriend?
We're probably going to get married here. Yeah.
Okay.
We're madly in love.
A Better Angels marriage.
You know, I'm really moved by that because my son's father basically broke up with his mom over it and called her horrible names and all these because he couldn't believe that she would vote for him. Mm. I think that's something that happens with a lot of us people who really view Donald Trump as what he portrays himself on the media to be. But the people who are in our lives are not him. And so to create that distinction allows us to kind of be free from the stories we make up about other people.
Really well said.
And then
said.
We can be with them.
Oh, Katie, we need your story. I hope you give your contact information to these folks.
Yeah. Katie, you should come to one of the Better Angels sessions. You'd be perfect for that.
Sounds right up my alley.
Okay, we'll get your information off air if we can. Vincent called in to say from Minneapolis, I'm a Johnson voter. And now both Trump and Hillary voters are mad at me. My aunt unfriended me on Facebook because of politics. It's not just Trump-Hillary voters who are having issues. It's also independents.
Yeah, interesting point.
Do you have is there room for independents in these dialogues, Bill, or is it really more the super polarized?
So we don't ban anybody from showing up, but we're trying to get people who identify with Trump or identify as anti-Trump just to create the kind of learning experience. So there's lots of reasons for that, but yes, there is this group out there that who get it from both sides.
You know, the other thing that I was thinking about, especially when we talked about your experience with that abortion discussion or climate change, I think what we find is that Americans are more centrist than we think on policy issues. And that centrism absolutely is not represented by our political class. Now, we are partially to blame for that because we send people that are on the hard edge of a lot of these views to Washington. But if you talk with Americans about their view on abortion, you get a lot, you get more intersection, I think, between what we think of as the two sides than you would ever hear in the political debate. I'm curious of your view on that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When the question was about the personal values and the the legal issue.
Yeah.
The two things that were said very powerfully by two people in the Blue Group in Ohio. One was a young man who said that he personally knows young women who were sexually abused in their families and became pregnant with a relative's child. And he said, I can't ask them to have that baby. And then a woman, a middle-aged woman, who said that women have always had abortions when they've been in very difficult situations all through history and will continue to, and we can't put them back into the back alleys and to, you know, and to die from this. There has to be a way that this is legal and safe. And then somebody added rare, you know, which was the Clinton thing.
Right.
That's so different. That is people agonizing about this, not just doing talking points.
Call here from Isaac in Rochester. Hi, Isaac.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a quick thing. So I was raised in a family where both my dad and my grandfather caucused in the local area for both of the Bushes. And so a lot of my family is conservative with some liberals. I myself identify as like a moderate or as a very middle of the line. Slightly left-leaning, but then I've gone off to college where a lot of my friends are very liberal, and I found that the dialogue at college is a lot more open to discussion than what I've seen at like at home, and even in my family, the gap between the liberal relatives and the conservative relatives is such where they've actually enacted a policy or an unofficial policy on Facebook where family cannot talk about politics because they get so heated. And I was just wondering, like, is there any way to, or maybe it's just the climate of college, but is there any way to, like, create an atmosphere everywhere that can be as open as, for instance, in college?
Good question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fact that the relationships are not as close makes it easier. But this is exactly what we're trying to do with these Better Angels experiences. And I encourage people who would like to organize one to do so, because you bring together neighbors, you bring together people from a community, and then in a structured way where nobody gets a chance to tear into somebody, okay, where a structured way to listen carefully, to express your views, you know, in a constructive way. And actually what we do with these, we ask people, what are your goals? What do you want to come to understand better or differently about the other side? We have them write down their goals. And then we have them write down questions that they want to ask of the other. And then we curate those questions so that they're good questions. And at the end, we have people write down what they learned about people who differ from them based on this experience. So it brings out the better angels of our nature when we're there to try to listen and understand.
Bill, do you think there is a way? Now these are done by necessity with small groups because they're intensive.
Yes.
Is there a way to scale it for an evening where you're in a bigger group? There's such a hunger for this,
yeah,
that having more influence, right, with more people, where you're in a larger town hall kind of group, but you're observing these principles. Can you do that, or does it really have to be limited to a smaller one-on-one?
If you had enough facilitators and enough breakout groups, you could do this in a big way. The other thing is that the second Ohio one was filmed for a documentary by an Emmy Award-winning documentarian named Jim Brown, and that'll be out at some point so people can actually observe. The skills workshops, you could have 100 people in those because you don't have to, it's not as intimate.
But the actual one-on-one interaction by necessity still has to be kind of small.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's right. But the scaling of that is, so I've got four or five people locally who are getting trained to do these, and I'm hoping other people, because the small version does not take a high-level facilitation training. It's modest facilitation. The weekend, you know, that
someone
took,
like
that,
you,
that took everything I had. Okay. But the smaller version does not. And we think that is replicable.
You can find out more information about what Bill's doing and what we were talking about. And we'll have a link, by the way, of our Indivisible show where we first talked about this NPR News with Carrie Miller or nprnews.org. Bill, thank you. I love knowing what you're doing, and keep up the good work, right?
And for all of us to be better angels, right?
And we'll talk more about that. If you just got in on the end of this conversation, want to know more about what Bill and I were talking about, find it, podcast it, NPR News with Carrie Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for a new podcast? I'm Tracy Mumford, a producer for NPR News. I'm part of the team working on 74 Seconds. It's a new podcast that looks at the shooting death of Philando Castile by Officer Geronimo Yanez. It happened last summer in Falcon Heights, Minnesota. Yanez is now facing charges in Castile's death. 74 Seconds looks at what happened that night and what happens now when a police officer goes on trial. Reporters John Collins and Reham Fashir will walk you through this case as it unfolds. It's a story about race, policing, and justice in America. Subscribe to 74 Seconds wherever you get your podcasts.